You're listening to Talk It Out, LGBTQ Voices in a Queer Election Year, presented by Gay City News and GayCityNews.com. I'm your host, Paul Schindler. Thanks for joining me for the 12th episode of Talk It Out. Today, we'll visit Florida, the vote-rich Sunbelt state that is the nation's third largest, with 30 electoral votes out of the 270 needed to win. Florida, you may ask, do you really see that as a swing state? There are several reasons why I think it's important to focus on Florida this year. First, the race between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris is not the only important contest there. Republican U.S. Senator Rick Scott is up for re-election in a year when Democrats are fighting hard to hold on to the Senate, and abortion rights and marijuana legalization are both on the ballot, measures that are ginning up voter enthusiasm. Even though Rick Scott was a two-term governor before winning his Senate seat in 2018, he's never carried the state by more than 1%. In fact, in his 2018 Senate victory, he squeaked in by just 0.1%. Former Congresswoman Debbie Mukersell-Powell, the Democratic candidate, has been closing in on Scott's lead in recent polls. Finally, in the presidential contest, in a recent poll, Kamala Harris cut in half Trump's earlier lead over Joe Biden, down to just 3%. I'm joined today by a longtime LGBTQ advocate, uniquely qualified to help us sort through all of this. Nadine Smith is the executive director of Equality Florida, the state's LGBTQ civil rights organization. Nadine details the way in which her group has fought back against attacks from far-right figures, from Governor Ron DeSantis, all the way down to Moms for Liberty and the Proud Boys. She also describes how the radicalism of MAGA Republicans in Florida has mobilized and strengthened the progressive pro-democracy coalition across the state. My guest is Nadine Smith, the executive director of Equality Florida. Since 1997, Equality Florida has led the fight for LGBTQ civil rights there. That's the job made far more challenging in recent years as the community has faced an onslaught of attacks from the governor's office and the state legislature to local school boards statewide. Nadine was named to the Time 100 in 2022, Time Magazine's annual list of the 100 most influential people in the world. Welcome to the podcast, Nadine.
Thanks for talking to me from Frontline Florida, Paul. It's great to be on the show.
Nadine, can you briefly talk about the mission and major priorities of Equality Florida?
Sure. You know, Equality Florida was born as the state of Florida sort of took a hard turn to the right, as Republicans began to take control of the governor's mansion, the House, the Senate. And so we've always had to organize in territory that was somewhat hostile, but we could find moderate voices. We could find, you know, people that you could appeal to hearts and minds. That changed as MAGA took over the Republican Party. And as everyone in the country talks about Project 2025, we're living Project 2025. We are experiencing, with the rise of Trumpism and the MAGA takeover, moderates have left the building, either retired or ousted in primaries. And so it has been everything they want to throw at us, from banning abortion to privatizing schools to the outright attack on the LGBTQ community. It has all been happening in Florida. That's the bad news. And in many ways, we warn people that this was coming even after marriage equality, especially after marriage equality. When too many people thought of that as a finish line, we said, you know, history teaches us that a backlash is coming. And I would be remiss if I said I envisioned just how horrific it was going to be. We knew it would arrive. We just did not envision how quickly and completely the Republican Party would be so fundamentally corrupted to the core.
This election year, What kinds of voter registration and mobilization efforts is your group engaged in?
Well, the good news that we're facing right now is that the tide truly has been turning. You know, they've thrown everything in the kitchen sink at us, but we've been successful in the courts. We've been successful in the legislature, stopping, for example, in this last session, 21 out of the 22 bad bills they threw at us. They're also losing in the court of public opinion. And so the energy that has arisen as a consequence of the Harris-Walz ticket is also having a profound effect. But perhaps the most significant thing is the abortion ballot measure. And we've been a founding partner of the campaign to restore abortion rights in the state of Florida. And so I think everyone had a sense, as we do, that the possibilities, because a lot of people, you know, people are calling it Rovember. We're talking about, we are beginning to see cross-party organizing in support of that ballot measure. And so for us, you know, we're going to mobilize more than 10,000 volunteers and voter engagement programs, including phone banking and door-to-door canvass. We're going to target Florida's 1.6 million pro-equality voters with messages that make a difference because they come from trusted messengers. You know, candidates tend to deliver the lowest common denominator message that's been tested, but they tend not to speak to the issues and concerns specifically of our community and the people that are close and, you know, accomplices to our community. And then, of course, there have been nearly 400,000 pro-equality voters who were purged from the vote-by-mail roster by Governor DeSantis's voter suppression laws. And so we're going to be targeting them to get them to re-register, you know, and the message to everybody, keep making sure you are registered. Do not assume that there is a trick too dirty for them to pull. And then finally, I think that the other key thing that we're going to be doing is we have been doing a lot of work with families, with parents, you know, as this far right group called Moms for Liberty, which is really just a political operation masquerading as a grassroots organization. It was founded by Bridget and Christian Ziegler when he was the head of the Florida Republican Party at a time that he was complaining, hey, we're losing suburban moms, so we got to figure out something to scare them. And of course, his wife, Bridget, is a school board member. And again, these are people who are political operatives. Many of them do not have children in public schools, and yet they want to dictate to parents who do have kids in those schools what they can read, what they can learn, what they could hear, whether or not their pronouns are respected, all of these things. The good news is, you know, we have real families from those school districts are vastly outnumbering Moms for Liberty at this point. So mobilizing parents who are tired of the far right using parent as though it is a shield to hide their book banning, censorship, and surveillance agenda, mobilizing parents is going to be a huge part of what we do. And of course, we've got 40 Pride events that bring over a million attendees across our state. We're going to be organizing Pride at the Capitol, 60 days of mobilizing people. So we've got a lot on our plate, but I like to remind everybody that right now we're all Floridians because this is the front line of a national fight.
The number of volunteers you mentioned and the fact that you are doing door knocks is impressive. Do you have specific priorities in terms of either demographic or geographic factors in that door knock campaign?
Yeah, we're door knocking all across the state. We may be door knocking in more places than any other organization. I don't know that for sure, but if we're not alone in all of these places, there are not many that are matching us in terms of the door knocking geographically. Our priority is, I don't want to say it's our only priority, but a priority of ours is protecting our school boards from takeovers by the extreme right. You know, I think many of us, if you were to ask, why do you do the work that you do? Many of us think back to our days in school. And that atmosphere of bullying and the absence of any role models and the absence of books in the library that reflected anyone who was like us. And so, you know, it hits a particular chord when they start going into schools and it's adults bullying kids and it's adults telling parents that you can't get healthcare for your kid and you can't, your kid won't be respected. And I think one of the things I'm proudest of is that We have for years invested deeply in schools. We have for years worked very closely with school districts. And even in the midst of all of these attacks, there are good people in those school districts that continue to do the hard work of protecting kids, even when it means protecting them from politicians who want to use their kids for political footballs.
And those efforts, geographically, are they spread across urban, suburban, small town, rural areas? Is there a particular breakdown?
Yeah, no, there's a mix because, you know, the fight for school boards is, you know, 67 counties. So, you know, clearly we're going to focus on the big school districts that have the largest population of students, but we're knocking doors in more rural places as well.
Are there groups that you typically partner with as you do these efforts?
You know, I think one of the things that we learned because Project 2025 is already unfolding in our state is that you can't do this work alone. I mean, we've always been fans of coalitions. We've always worked in coalitions, but I think we are building unprecedented coalitions. We're working with more organizations than we ever have in the past because people understand the stakes. But, you know, obviously around the abortion rights, we work closely with Planned Parenthood. We work with the teachers associations, parents and teachers association. We work with a lot of the local organizations. You know, we are a nonpartisan group. So we're not, you know, we're not a part of any political party. That said, it is very clear that one party has made, the Republican Party has made attacking the LGBTQ community a fundamental part of their strategy. And I think that the good news, I started off talking about the bad news, but I want to say to people who are watching from a distance that we call it Frontline Florida because we know what they test here, they intend and have already begun to export. But the things that we've done to repel those attacks, we're also exporting. We're also helping other states that are facing these same bad bills, same bad policies. We're teaching them from our victories how to win in their states as well. And so, you know, for us, we say this is a national fight because people forget when Ron DeSantis first said he was going to, even before he announced publicly he was running for president, there were a lot of people who had stood next to Trump who saw DeSantis as the smarter, more disciplined, less baggage. You know, Elon Musk called him the inevitable Republican victor. A lot of these hedge fund billionaires who were backing Trump suddenly switched horses. And we were among the few who were saying he has so many flaws that we can expose. And in fact, we think it is really important that we put a great deal of time and energy into showing people this isn't the free state of Florida, it's the opposite. This is an Orwellian way of describing Florida. When you were taking rights away, you were basically banning abortion entirely. And with the supermajorities and the power the Republicans have held, we're now seeing the corruption. You know, it's always follow the money. So if anyone Google what's happening at University of Florida with Ben Sasse, and the, you know, the sweetheart deals, this has been corruption in broad daylight. You look at New College, a well-respected area of higher education in the state of Florida. DeSantis has done everything to destroy it, ousted qualified and competent people and put his henchmen in, and then tripled the salary for the president. So we're seeing that level of corruption, but it's being exposed. So I would say to everyone who's watching, yes, this is the front line, but we are pushing back. We are turning the tide, both in terms of clawing back rights that have been taken away, both through the court process, but also through the political process. And we are also seeing people beginning to speak up. So I think, you know, Florida is back in play politically. The abortion ballot measure is a big piece of why it's back in play, but it is back in play because people are tired of this cruel, mean-spirited divisiveness. They actually want to build a future for this country that includes all of us.
So you talk about the coalitions you're part of and have been a part of. Can I infer from that the advent of the DeSantis years and now this affirmative effort to adopt an abortion rights referendum has strengthened the power of progressive coalitions across Florida?
I think so. I, you know, you find out things about people in adversity, right? You find out who in those moments looks to cut a deal for themselves or looks to put themselves in the most favorable position or who runs and hides from the fight. And then you find out who links arms in dangerous times and stands side by side with you. And I am proud to look around the state of Florida right now and see so many organizations across the range of issues, arms locked, you know, head high, ready to fight whatever comes and not leaving anyone behind. And so it has been, you know, there's a professor, I think his name's Stephen Prothrow out of Boston University. And I quote him quite a bit because he talks about backlash being a lagging indicator of progress, that by the time the backlash arrives, it's really, they basically said, we see where society is going and we're really too late, but we want to inflict as much harm before it gets there. And so what that also means is not only is it an indicator that we are moving in the direction we intend to, but the seeds of incredible progress get planted in the midst of backlash. You know, he uses marriage equality as one of the object lessons of how this occurs. But what I think it tells us is in the midst of this fight, we have to defend the things that we've worked so hard for, but we cannot take our eyes off the future. We have to position our feet for the possibility that on the other side of this, just like on the other side of what 38 ballot measure defeats for marriage equality, just on the other side of every one of those defeats were victory, another victory, another victory, then court case after court case, and then finally the Supreme Court, and a massive shift in public opinion. And in the same way right now, we have to make sure that as we fight on defense, for sure, we look forward and we say to ourselves, what world are we actually building? Because it will never be enough simply to be in opposition to what they are doing. We actually have to have a vision for the future that is so, so compelling that even some of the people who may have stood with Trump and MAGA and helped initiate some of this awful Project 2025 policy can find their way back. And we're seeing it. We're seeing people quietly put down the hat and put down the hate. We're seeing people, you know, I met a guy who I spoke at Howard University and ended up meeting a guy from Delray Beach who said, he and I spoke for probably, I don't know, 45 minutes in a stairwell. He had just left MAGA. He had slowly walked away. And he had come to this because he'd spent so much time attacking the 1619 Project. He felt like he needed to come and actually hear about it for himself. And now he's the chair of Republicans for Harris, or co-chair of Republicans for Harris in Florida, and has launched an organization called Leaving MAGA. And I don't think he can keep up with the demand with people reaching out to him. So I think there is, when we say the tide is turning, we mean that not just on LGBTQ issues where we've had incredible success in, you know, dismantling the Don't Say Gay law, ensuring that parents actually do have options to keep their kids safe. But we're seeing it in lots of ways. I told somebody the other day, somebody from my high school, I grew up in the panhandle of Florida, very conservative part of the state. Someone who had quietly blocked me in 2016 or the lead up to the 2016 election, I noticed was now, you know, liking pictures and commenting and, you know, no big dramatic speech, but just a cessation of the war. And I think that's happening in a lot of places right now.
Nadine, you talked about playing defense and you pointed to a fairly remarkable statistic. You say you beat back 21 of 22 anti-LGBTQ pieces of legislation. How did you do that?
Well, you know, several things. You know, we used to have lobby days at the Capitol and it would just be a few days. We had people on the ground at the Capitol in Tallahassee every single day, 60 days of legislative session. This is where that coalition energy that I was talking about really showed up, you know, helping to facilitate, whether it's faith groups or youth, you know, student groups, a drag queen march on the Capitol, whatever, you know, whatever the energy we could bring into the Capitol. So one, I think the sustained presence. The other was that DeSantis's, you know, star has been, you know, in fact, his polling began to crater. Not only did he not emerge victorious in the presidential contest. After he and Nikki Haley dropped out, he still came in third in Florida in the primary. So I say that to say, I think that it was a reflection of an incredible amount of grassroots organizing, but also I think there are a lot of people who have followed the prevailing wind. They have voted for things that they know are wrong and given the chance to sometimes quietly behind the scenes, but sometimes publicly help us stop these bills. There were a few folks in key positions who stepped up in those moments. You know, our belief as an organization that has always organized in a place where Republicans are in the majority, that you have to leave the light on, even for people who have done, you know, things that are heartbreaking in their harm. We always believe that, you know, you leave the light on and perhaps they find their way back. And in key moments, that may be the only moment where their courage, comes to the fore. But 21 times this session, we had the right people standing with us at the right moment.
When you speak to voters this year, whether they're members of your organization or voters you're doing outreach to, equality voters, and potential voters, what are you hearing as the major concerns people have on their mind?
You know, I think one of the things in the state of Florida is because we have had a governor who's been running for president for so long, I think a lot of people feel like we've been ungoverned. We haven't had a governor. The only things they hear about are things that he was doing to position himself either to run for president or as a right-wing darling on the national stage. So for Floridians, you know, we've got tons of really pressing issues. Insurance that nobody can afford, affordable housing that's non-existent. We are bearing the brunt of climate change with a governor who has forbidden agencies from even acknowledging that climate change is real. So I think for Floridians, there's a greater sense that huge issues that impact our daily lives are being ignored by the Republican leadership that holds a supermajority. The other thing that we are hearing from people is excitement, a great deal of hope. They're seeing, they like what they see coming out of the Harris-Walz ticket. They like the energy. They like the joy, the positivity of it. You know, people, it's exhausting. Fear is all that Trump and MAGA have. If they can get you into your most fearful mind, they can move you like a chess piece around the board. The moment people stop being afraid of their neighbor, afraid of strangers, afraid of difference, then they can talk to each other, then the energy changes. And, you know, I mentioned my friend who's just launched Leaving MAGA, and he says, you know, part of it is that they cut you off from any kind of contact that might cause you to question. And if you have even the tiniest inkling of doubt about what you're hearing or seeing, if you voice it out loud, the entire ecosystem kind of collapses on you to get you back in line. And he said, so it makes it very hard to escape especially when you've burnt all your bridges with your old friend and your entire social network is now other MAGA activists. He said, you basically are on a lonely journey away from that because you don't have a community to return to. And so that's why I think that there's sort of a sleeping giant, a whole lot more people who have quietly walked away, who aren't making a big deal of it because they're not trying to become a target. There's a guy, I think his name may be Kyle Weston, but he's another Floridian, big time MAGA guy who has now become a Harris supporter. And he detailed on X all of the ways that they've come after him. So I think that there's something is breaking open here in Florida that ought to give hope to everybody across the country that it is possible for this fever to break. You know, certainly there are people who are just deep in their racism, their white supremacy, their anti-LGBTness, their contempt for women, all of that. But there are a whole lot of other people that got pulled into the gravitational draw of a fear mindset, a scarcity mindset, that are reachable, and I think they are being reached. I think that's why you're seeing Harris pull numbers, not just raising millions of dollars, but getting first-time donors, getting people who've never been part of the political process that way before, getting volunteers who are knocking doors and phone banking for the very first time. And we're seeing the same thing. When I mentioned all of the parents who are getting involved, these are parents who never thought they'd have to show up at a school board meeting to defend the most basic rights of their kids. And they're learning their way. And at first we were nervous because, you know, Moms for Liberty doesn't go anywhere without the Proud Boys. They're sort of militia entourage. And so asking people to walk past Proud Boys masked up in an open carry state is a daunting thing. And we have an obligation to make sure our volunteers know exactly what circumstance they're going into, but it's not our role to tell them, to decide for them what they can and can't do. And we have seen parents and students walk right past that gauntlet. Our volunteers have not flinched. Beacon of Hope, a warning about how toxic it can get very quickly when MAGA Republicans control every level of government, but also the incredible resilience, the incredible heart and strategy that has us pushing back successfully and turning the tide.
In the last several years, we've seen abortion rights win victories in places from Kansas to Ohio. Very encouraging signs. You have a tough hurdle in Florida because you have a 60% requirement, not a 50% requirement. So you're 60 plus one rather than 50 plus one. On the other hand, it seems to me that would make your efforts all the more intense to pull out voters. How is that referendum doing? And what is the implication of that higher hurdle in terms of voter mobilization?
Sure. Well, to be clear, the higher hurdle was implemented by Republicans because they wanted to foreclose any way but through them to get laws passed. That's the bad news. The good news is Floridians have seen through it and time again passed through the ballot really good things like returning citizens, getting the right to vote back, you know, solar energy, even when the Republicans put a bad solar bill on to counteract a good solar bill. Not only did Floridians vote for the right one, they voted down the bad one. The polling is showing some really strong numbers in support for access to abortion. And so, you know, can we win? Certainly. I'm sure they're going to try some dirty trick. They're probably going to try and do the same play they ran with solar by putting a competing measure forward. But again, Floridians have shown the ability not only to show up in numbers necessary to pass these measures, but also to see through, you know, the BS. And so I think we're all very hopeful. There's a synergy growing right now, both in terms of turning out people for the ballot measure and now a whole new universe of enthusiastic volunteers that are emerging because the federal election, the presidential election, has been injected with new vigor.
To what extent in the public conversation about the abortion rights referendum is there a link between the denial of abortion rights and the political posture of a Senator Rick Scott or of Donald Trump?
Well, you know, they play the same game over and over again. You hear Donald Trump doing everything in his power to distance himself from Project 2025, you know, as though he's never heard of such a thing. What? Gambling in Casablanca? You know, I mean, it's absurd. And yet here we have evidence, all of the evidence. You know, J.D. Vance wrote the foreword for the book from the architect of Project 2025. And they do the same thing around abortion. You know, they think they can speak one way to their base and their donors and then feign ignorance in front of the general public. But I don't think anybody's buying it anymore.
What are you hearing about how the U.S. Senate race is going there? My understanding is that Rick Scott has consistently had a lead, but that former Congresswoman Debbie Mukersal Powell has been gaining ground. What's your assessment of where that is?
Well, I think it's, again, I think the abortion ballot measure and the change at the top of the ticket means all bets are off, that anything is possible in this moment. I you know, there was a pollster recently who was saying that who is being pulled into the political fray at this moment is so different than the usual electorate that the models can't be trusted. And I think that, you know, Democrats have learned that it doesn't matter really what the polling is. You got to put your foot on the gas and keep going no matter what. So Yeah, I think that the Senate race is in play. I think that the more you begin to see the meltdown at the top of the ticket, the flailing at the top of the ticket, that it has reverberations further down. Rick Scott can't run away from his own record. He can't run away from his party's record. He's been in leadership within the Republican Party. He can't distance himself from the things that they've done, not just in Florida, but across the country. So it is a turnout fight in Florida. And I think the fact that Florida is in play bodes well for everything that we're doing, certainly the abortion ballot measure and the pro-equality champions up and down the ticket.
The polling on the presidential race, news came out this week that Kamala Harris had cut the lead of Donald Trump over the Democratic ticket in half. The numbers were a 3-point spread. Realistically, do you think that Kamala Harris can put Florida in play this year?
I think that the synergy of all of these put Florida in play. I think the abortion ballot measure, long before anybody was talking about changes in the ticket, felt as though that could put Florida in play, that it could have a cascading effect all the way, you know, from the top of the ticket all the way down. And now I think the way that the Harris-Walz team is executing their campaign has been such a spirited and joyful contrast with Trump and MAGA and fear. We get hostages released, dissidents, Russian dissidents released, and Trump congratulates Putin. I mean, you know, like everything about the small, petty, cruel hatefulness of their campaign, I think people really are tired. And so, you know, it is a 80-some-day foot race that we're in right now. And with, you know, I think the Democratic convention could be a moment where this goes to the whole, to a whole nother level. So, you know, there was Republicans for Harris that had a Zoom call. You know, everybody was doing Zoom calls. They had 60,000 people turn out for that Zoom call. So that is something that I would not have predicted, you know, but I think that it's, there's a lot of people saying that the only, that we're done with this mean narcissist. We're tired. Even people who are voting for Harris, who are Republicans, you know, they say quite plainly, I'm doing this because the only way for the Republican Party that I care about to be reborn is for this MAGA mutation to die. You know, so I think there are a lot of people are coming to that place, coming to that from a lot of different places, you know, the total lack of ethics in Trump, you know, his record, his allegiance to Putin over his own country. Like there's a thousand different reasons that there are Republicans stepping away from him. But I think if you sort of boil them all down, it would be they believe the only way to save their party is to put an end to this MAGA mutation.
Nadine, for listeners either in Florida or outside of the state who are interested in supporting the efforts that you're doing, what opportunities are there and what's the avenue for them to investigate those opportunities?
Absolutely. Well, as I said, Florida is the front line of a national battle. So therefore, you are all Floridians and you are all welcome to this fight. In fact, we've been doing fundraisers all across the country. We called it Coast to Coast for Equality. We've been to California, to Seattle, to Provincetown, to Chicago. We'll be doing one in New York shortly. But the message has been the same. We want to tell it to you exactly how it's unfolding. And we want to leave you with the hope that it is possible to beat them even where they are the strongest. And that no matter where you live, you can't abandon the front line. So people can certainly donate to Equality Florida, our website, equalityflorida.org. You can also volunteer for phone banks, even if you don't live in our state. We've got remote phone banks. We do a great job of training volunteers. If you want to spend some time in Florida, come on down. We'll deal you into our field canvas. Of course, if you're in another swing state, stay put. But I want to tell people, no matter where you are, especially the folks who are in states where it's not really a race, lend your support to the places where we are on the front line of this fight, and we need you. So I've been really grateful for the outpouring of support that we've seen through our Coast to Coast for Equality program. You can volunteer no matter where you live. You can donate no matter where you live. And this is a moment that when all is said and done, you want to be proud that when we needed you most, you stood tall with us.
And those opportunities are all available through your website.
Absolutely. You can reach me directly, Nadine@EqualityFlorida.org, N-A-D-I-N-E @EqualityFlorida.org, and we'll get you squared away.
And your social media presence on Instagram and X?
We are everywhere. Facebook, Instagram, X, TikTok. What am I leaving out? I think we're on Blue Sky too.
Okay. Nadine Smith, Executive Director of Equality Florida. Thank you for joining the podcast.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks again to Nadine Smith, Executive Director of Equality Florida. And thanks to all of you for joining me again this week. For more information about Equality Florida, visit equalityflorida.org and follow the group on Facebook, Instagram, X, and TikTok. You can also reach Nadine directly at Nadine@EqualityFlorida.org. That's Nadine@EqualityFlorida.org. In our August 28th episode, we'll take a look at North Carolina, a state that recent polling shows is clearly in play. I'll be joined by Eleazar Posada, who heads up Equality North Carolina, and also by Marques Thompson, Organizing Director at Democracy North Carolina. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe now at Apple, Spotify, and other podcast platforms.